All right, all you movie junkies, it is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. And welcome to the SLS Cast episode 17. Yes, 17. That's right. We are officially on the SLS Cast episode 17. That means that we are now legal in the state of Texas, but be careful because in other places, 17 can still get you 20.
Oh. Yeah.
Didn't have a joke last time. Had a joke this time.
How long have you... Were you, like, preparing that joke for some time now?
Or actually, I did think about it an hour ago. I was, you know, finalizing the research for the show and everything. And I was like, man, you know, this is episode 17, you know? And I'm like, you know what? I could make a crack about being 17 years old. We're that immature. So let's do that. So, so that was my... Yeah, I kind of thought that up in my head.
Nice. Yeah.
Yay.
So how's your week going so far?
Not bad. Just trying to get some extra work in, as I am going to be off on Saturday due to prepping for my trip to Disney. In addition to, I do this annual singing contest in the Heights. It's called Idol of the Heights, and for the third year in a row, I am in the finals, so going for the big money. If I win first place, I get $1,500. So, woo!
Cool. And for those of you that don't know, Matt is in Houston. So the Heights is a really cool area in Houston that do cool things like karaoke competitions and singing competitions and drinking competitions, where you don't really see that stuff going on much around these parts of West Hollywood, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, you've kind of already got the entire you could become a movie star, television star thing.
True,
that's
I guess
the
we
whole
have that.
Shtick of Hollywood. So, do you need a karaoke contest too? I mean, you know.
True, but in Texas, you have the well. You could be a, I don't know. You could be a Longhorn. You could be a Cougar. You could be an Aggie.
Well, actually, that just requires getting accepted to the college.
True.
Yeah, there is that. But I will say that they did change up the competition because previously, this is the fourth year they've done it. I started in the second year, so hence why this is the third year in a row. And the previous 2 years, or previous 3 years, it really was more or less just a glorified karaoke contest, really. But this year, they actually have done it so the semifinals and the finals and stuff, you actually have to know your song and you actually have to get in there and there's no karaoke lyrics or anything. You're actually getting up there and singing and you got to play it to the audience and play it to the judges and stuff. So it's really kind of cool and I'm excited to be doing my stuff next, or on Saturday. So
do you do the same song, or do you change?
No. Oh, it's different.
Every time you perform,
it is definitely different.
May I ask will be performing?
Sure. Well, let's see. They did instead
Hot
of
legs.
Just having general preliminary rounds like they've done in the past few years. This year they did themed rounds where you actually had to come in, like, so if you could come in on the rock/pop night, or you could come in on the country night, or you could come in on the standards R&B blues night. And so I went on the rock night, and I did Mad Season by Matchbox 20. And so then from that night, I progressed to the semifinal round, so I did not have to do the other two preliminary rounds. And then for the semifinal round, I did Garth Brooks' New Way to Fly, which got me into the finals, where I will be doing Cry in the Sun, an a cappella rendition of Cry in the Sun by Better Than Ezra.
Huh. Garth Brooks, is that still in the rock category?
No. No, once you got to the semifinals, you could sing anything you wanted.
Oh, right. See, right. Whenever I look at you, Matt, I kind of get the Barry Manilow impression that you'd be singing some piano tune and serenading a young woman in the crowd, maybe holding a glass of wine in one hand.
That's funny. I write the songs that make the whole world sing, and while I'm doing it at my piano, where, you know, Davy, who was in the Navy, and all that kind of shit. Yeah.
Perfect lyrics.
Thank you. Way to combine Billy Joel with Barry Manilow.
Drunks.
Yeah. I have a sister named Mandy, though. Does that count?
Oh, really? Do you ever sing the song Mandy to your
No,
sister Mandy?
Because her given name is Amanda, and then most of the time they call her Manda, but, you know, she could be Mandy because she is, her full name is Amanda. So.
In your turn. Oh, is that the right song?
Mandy. Yes. Mandy. And okay. You send me away, oh Mandy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So at any rate, yeah, so that's my, that's been my, primary stuff that's been going on, just getting ready. Also, I guess we should probably talk about the loss of our dear departed Mikey. He who edited our show and made us sound as good as we could, which was a considerable feat considering how bad we actually sound. He had to depart our company onto bigger and better things. He had a really great opportunity that was just going to be taking up too much of his time, so he unfortunately will not be with us anymore, though he might still occasionally drop by for a guest appearance now and then. So Mikey, wherever you are, good night and good luck.
Now serenade him.
Oh Mikey, well you gave and you gave with your editing, but you sent yourself away. Oh my! There you go. That's it. Sorry. Yeah. So, what about you, dude? What's going on in your world?
Oh yeah, not much. Just prepping for next week's show. For all of you guys that don't know, Matt will be out of town next week, and Andrew/Andy and Donimus will be co-hosting with me, and we'll be spanning all the overlooked movies of yesteryear of 2012, so I've just kind of been preparing for that all 35 minutes that took me to prepare.
So, yeah, so that means that I'm not gonna, I was gonna do a pre-recorded essay segment, but once I found out that how in-depth the conversation was gonna be, and basically this is just gonna be Andy and Tim going at it over several movies that are on a list from a movie website called firstshowing.net, and it's basically from an article called The 19 Movies That You Didn't See in 2012. So they've actually gone back and forth and have seen several of these movies, and they're going to be discussing them in depth. So this is going to be really kind of cool. So it ought to give you guys a chance to, you know, become all highfalutin and cultured on these movies you should have already seen. Where have you been? And also give you some ideas on some movies if you actually didn't see them, reasons to go check them out. Additionally, since I think we've only done this one time, if at all, since we brought it up, Tim's going to be busting out the I'm the Only One Who Liked It segment regarding The Happening. So that ought to be fun, because I read the emails that go back and forth when we discussed the pre-show, and spoiler alert, Andy didn't like it. So that ought to be pretty cool to hear that conversation. I'll actually be looking forward to that. So that's going to be the whole show for next week. So there's not going to be any news or 3 Squared or anything. It's just going to be a real big in-depth discussion. So it'll be really cool to see how this goes. And I guess on that note, news! Kind of sounds like I'm saying snooze, and we don't want you to do that.
Please don't.
Go ahead and lead off, Tim.
Sure. Okay. So I don't know if you ever heard of the show called Survivor or not, but it's only been around for what, like 52 seasons, I think, here in the U.S.
It is amazing like how many seasons they can fit into a year. Yes.
There's actually a multiple versions of Survivor throughout the world, and one of them is in France, the particular one I will be talking about, and somebody actually died on that show. He, this young chap named Gerald Babin, this happened some weeks back. He died on a Friday, if that means anything to you guys, after suffering cardiac arrest during the first day of filming. That's a great way to start off a film shoot, especially, you know, with these shows like Survivor, where it's a ton of, I mean, it doesn't take a ton of money to do it, but I guess you have to, like, reserve the island, like, this part of the island for a month or however long it takes them to do this show, just for, you know, just for these people to, you know, kind of screw each other, or not screw each other, but screw around, you know, in the wilderness and do games and do whatever. Basically what happened is that after he jumped, the whole group of people jumped from a boat, and he had to participate in a tug of war, and he kept apparently complaining about cramps in his arms, and he was given medical attention at the scene by the staff doctor for being airlifted by helicopter to a nearby hospital. So again, cardiac arrest. To me, I kind of wonder after reading this, or after I read it, why more health and medical issues don't come up during some of these shows. I mean, you have The Amazing Race, where every once in a while somebody will tear their Achilles tendon, or they'll pull a hamstring or something like that, but never anybody, like, dying or, you know, getting decapitated or getting their arms pulled off or getting eaten by a bear or anything like that. So, unfortunately, that had to happen to this Gerald Babin in France. And the island, I'm trying to think of what island. I think they were in, like, Cambodia or something, so... In other TV news, apparently there's the Big Brother TV show where they have somebody, like this group of people in a house, and basically the house is in a studio because there's not really an outside section, and there's cameras everywhere watching their every move, and they have to do all these tasks and complete all these assignments, and I guess after every episode they get voted off, or they choose who's going to be taken off whichever episode, again, Big Brother. However, there's a competing show. Big Brother was on CBS, and there's this other show called Glass House, The Glass House, on ABC, and it looks like that some of the producers of Big Brother went over and came up with The Glass House, which I believe is basically the same exact concept as Big Brother. Just people watching them, they have to do tasks, and they have to do obstacles and whatnot, and they, you know, they vote each other off. And I guess there's like some sum of money that, you know, one person wins by the end of it. Well, it looks like that ABC is going to get sued for arbitration by CBS to a sum of $500,000. An arbitration agreement just screwed these guys over. But however, it's not going to do anything to the TV show. So you have Big Brother now competing with Glass House, which, you know, I mean, it's not like... I mean, how many karaoke TV shows, how many sing-along TV shows are we going to have that resemble American Idol? I mean, you already have The Voice. I mean, especially with America's Got Talent and Dancing with the Stars and or So You Think You Can Dance, and just all these shows that are basically the same thing with very little variation between the two. But then again, you don't really hear much about arbitration agreement. I guess it's because, obviously, the producer's going from one show to the other. And I posed this to Matt earlier, this little ideology, or this thought, I guess it came up in my mind earlier, is that you don't really see much of arbitration agreements with movies to TV for, I guess, this obvious reason. However, now that we're going into big franchise movies, like we have the Marvel Universe, and soon we will be having the Justice League Universe, Marvel versus DC, you're gonna... I mean, there's got to be some people, the producers or some of the creative talent from Marvel that might go over to DC. I mean, this is a maybe, who knows, maybe not. But if so, would there be an arbitration agreement to, you know, to keep whatever content, or I guess whatever content from Marvel they would bring over to ABC, or not to ABC, to DC? I mean, whether it be ideas for a character, ideas for a storyline, how they do a special effect, or maybe a special effect will look too much like this. Maybe the cape, Batman's cape or Superman's cape will move the same way as Thor's cape, and oh, there could be an arbitration agreement to take somebody to court for that. But who knows? Who knows? Maybe not. Matt said earlier that probably that, you know, might not happen because it's movies and you have TV. Two totally different animals when it comes down to it. In other news, I said a couple episodes ago that there have been some TV shows like this one, not Project X, I forget. It's, oh yeah, 21 and over about the teens and getting drunk during college and having sex with people and all that stuff. They had to re-edit the movie and shoot additional scenes to appeal to the Chinese movie market, because that's a $2.5 billion box office revenue market that they have going on over there that, you know, Hollywood can get more money from that. And because we all know how Hollywood is, and they really love their money, regardless of, you know, subjecting crappy talent or crappy storylines or crappy movies to the American audience to get that money. Well, it looks like that happened again. And it happened twice. One is with the new Brad Pitt movie, World War Z, and the other is Iron Man, Iron Man 3. However, it's a little bit different between the two, the situations. With Iron Man 3, what they did to change, what they changed to appeal to the Chinese audience is that they added these certain Chinese characters. They shot some scenes that took place in China. They just did more Asian things with the movie, I guess. They even added two characters that are going to be more prominent in the Chinese version than there will be in the American version. However, what's not that big of a deal with this is that it's more going to be deleted scenes in the American version that will be shown in the Chinese version, I guess, with all the Asian scientists or the Asian characters. It'll just be in the deleted scenes whenever we get the DVD or the Blu-ray. However, in the World War Z movie, apparently, there is a line that the studio wanted them to get rid of where they mentioned that the virus, the zombie virus, started in China. And actually, this is on cinemablend.com, they say that the rap reports that Paramount execs had decided to change a minor plot point so as not to draw the ire of Chinese censors. In one scene, the characters discuss where the horrendous world-shattering outbreak that caused a zombie apocalypse originated from, and someone suggests China. This might seem innocuous, but Argo has faced criticism for similarly brief references / possible offenses, so the execs told World War Z's filmmakers to pick a different country to blame for its fictional end-of-the-world scenario. So, because of this billion-dollar market, this billion-dollar movie market we have overseas, we kind of have to cater more to them with certain movies, especially these big blockbuster movies where they're forking over hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars, and they want to get the biggest return that they can. Also in other news, I have more Evil Dead and Army of Darkness news. It turns out that the Evil Dead director, actually the Evil Dead director for the current Evil Dead named Fede Alvarez, looks like he was questioned at this past week's WonderCon, where he was asked if there would ever be a Evil Dead, his version, and a Sam Raimi, you know, cross. And he said that he would like that to happen, because he already has an idea for Evil Dead 2, but for an Evil Dead 3, he would like to cross the characters from the Evil Dead series with his Evil Dead series with the, you know, Army of Darkness, Sam Raimi's Evil Dead series. So you'll have Ash with the character of Mia, which, you know, nobody really knows who I'm talking about now if you haven't seen the movie, but she is basically the Ash of the current Evil Dead. And also my last bit of news are it has to do with the visual effects houses that have been going bankrupt. Well, it looks like, quote from CinemaBlend again, that Rhythm and Hues, the visual effects company, fresh off both an Oscar win for Life of Pi and a bankruptcy filing, has finally found a buyer to keep them alive. Prana Studios, a visual effects and animation studio that is one of Rhythm and Hues' competitors, has acquired the company. Well, a holding company closely associated with Prana Studios made the acquisition, according to THR, the Hollywood Reporter, but it seems to be as effective as a merger. So, finally, this is a solution to the problems within the visual effects houses, is that you don't necessarily help them out, you just buy them out and make your company bigger.
Good news, good news. So, well, at least it was news. It's up to the other people to think about whether or not it was good. My news, however, starts with Danny Boyle. Yes, Danny Boyle, the English film director, best known for Slumdog Millionaire and 28 Days Later, 127 Hours, and Trainspotting. He has a little bit of a discussion about 3D. The Guardian says that 3D movies may be nothing more than a, quote, phase, end quote, according to Oscar-winning British director Danny Boyle. He says, I don't use 3D, end quote. Quote, I am a spectacle wearer, so I hate going to 3D movies because you have to wear two pairs of spectacles, which makes you feel like even more of a prat. You know how everybody feels a bit of a prat wearing 3D spectacles? You, as a spectacle wearer, feel a double prat, end quote. Now, even though he doesn't personally like them and he thinks that 3D is not going to be around for the long term, he did admit that there was some extraordinary work being carried out in 3D. He actually described some of the effects in Ang Lee's Oscar-winning Life of Pi as, quote, incredible. But he added, quote, it's a tool, you know. There are sound innovations coming, actually, particularly Dolby Atmos, which are going to do something very equivalent to what 3D does. So, I don't know if 3D will survive, to be honest. I think it may be a phase, end quote. It's interesting because, you know, you got James Cameron, who's with the Avatar thing. Even Peter Jackson has gone on with the Lord of the Rings stuff. Or at least with Hobbit, and that's in 3D now. Mm-hmm. So...
With Dolby Atmos, so that's sound. I wonder how...
I know. I'm actually kind of... You know, if anybody's got the inside track on that stuff, I mean, you know it's going to be a high-profile director. So, it's really kind of interesting, because even with Hugo, Martin Scorsese did 3D for Hugo. However, even though he did Hugo, even he's gone back to 2D for his new film. So, I don't know. I think that there's going to be a market for it, given that kids and teenagers are always going to want stupid stuff and gimmicky stuff in 3D anyway. But I really think that, on the whole, the money's going to bear it out. Because if there wasn't a market for it, we would only see just 3D. But we don't. You have the option to see movies in 2D. And right. I think that there's a reason for that. So, I'm not sure if it's a, quote, phase, but I think that it's not going to be as prevalent as it is now, let's say, in 5 years. I think it'll still be used, but on a much more limited basis.
Right. Probably much more for the movies that deserve to be in 3D, like Hugo and Avatar and Life of Pi.
Exactly. Exactly.
At least I hope so. You know, where it's more of a positive.
I hear you.
Part of 3D.
So yeah. So and then moving along, according to the playlist on IndieWire.com, the plot details have been revealed for Wes Anderson's The Grand Budapest Hotel, with Fox Searchlight picking up the film. And this has got the most redonkulous cast I think I've ever heard. Okay, the cast, which IndieWire here, the playlist, is referring to as, quote, absolutely ridiculous, end quote, and I agree, includes Ralph Fiennes, Edward Norton, Owen Wilson, Tilda Swinton, Jude Law, Bill Murray, Adrian Brody, Harvey Keitel, Jason Schwartzman, Willem Dafoe, Jeff Goldblum, Saoirse Ronan, Matthew Almerich, F. Murray Abraham, and Bob Balaban.
I like him.
Yeah, also Tom Wilkinson and cool. Tony Revolori. So now he's a new one playing a young boy in the thing. However, Screen Daily seems to have dropped the nice log line about the film, and here it is. Quote, The Grand Budapest Hotel tells of a legendary concierge at a famous European hotel between the wars and his friendship with a young employee who becomes his trusted protege. But you know what? I think we're going to have to bust out movie voice. The story involves the theft and recovery of a priceless Renaissance painting, the battle for an enormous family fortune, and the slow and then sudden upheavals that transformed Europe during the first half of the 20th century.
I wonder what kind of David Bowie songs it'll have in it.
I have no idea. I don't know. I mean, given that previously Anderson had revealed that the movie was inspired by the films of Ernst Lubitsch and Billy Wilder, citing To Be or Not to Be and Shop Around the Corner, which takes place in Budapest, FYI, according to the playlist. I don't know. I think this is going to be an interesting movie. I thought this was going to be one of those massive, one of those mass big name cast fest, like New Year's Eve or whatever, where it's really just a train wreck and they just got a whole bunch of big people to put it together kind of a thing.
But a lot of Wes Anderson movies have a stellar cast. I mean, even like the Royal Tenenbaums had a huge cast.
I know, but that true, but not like this. I saw this and I really thought it was going to be one of those huge ensemble cast train wrecks. However, this article has made me want to see this movie. So I'm going to be looking forward to this.
Yeah, and you can't really go wrong with the Wes Anderson movie. I mean, even his least favorite or his worst movie is still really good. I mean, a lot of people don't like Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. I love the movie. I mean, my least favorite of his was the Darjeeling Limited. But a ton of people love that movie, think that's one of his best. But it's still a good movie, and I'm personally really excited for this.
Outstanding. Well, I mean, good. I guess that's going to be a movie. Check it. It's going to be a movie we'll be reviewing when it comes out. And then another, this is kind of a sad bit of news that happened a few days ago, but as you know, we only record on Tuesdays. This is when we have to talk about it. Richard Griffiths passed away on the 29th, and he died from complications of heart surgery. He was a rather portly man, so it is no wonder that he needed heart surgery in the first place. That being said, it is still a bummer. This guy, most people only know him for basically playing Vernon Dursley in the Harry Potter films. Most people around here in this day and age. Yeah. But he actually was really well known for his stage work as well. And yeah, for exactly, yes, for the History Boys. He played the teacher Hector. And he was also very well known in television, of course, primarily via the BBC, but he was he had the detective show Pie in the Sky, and that ran for 3 years. And I mean, there're just so many people who have just wonderful things to say about him. And it's one of those things where that you just get the sense that these people are not just saying something nice because you say something nice. You try and say nice things when someone passes away.
Yeah.
And when you get, actors like Richard E. Grant, he says, quote, "My beloved Uncle Monty Richard Griffith died last night. Chin chin, my dear friend," end quote. You know, you also have even Daniel Radcliffe, okay, who not only did Harry Potter with him, but also starred in Equus, said, quote, "Any room he walked into was made twice as funny and twice as clever just by his presence," end quote. And, you know, these are things that people don't, they do not say these things just because. And I think this is probably the best way to say to sum up him as a person. And this is said by Sir Nicholas Heitner, who said, quote, "His anecdotes were legendary. They were literally endless. They would go on for hours, apparently without destination, constantly side-splitting," end quote. And you know what? That kind of makes me sad that I never got a chance to know this kind of guy. So, sleep well. Go off into the good night.
I wanted to play like a violin backing track under that. Yeah, I mean, it's really sad, and yeah, no, I agree. He's just one of those really prominent, well-spoken about British actors. And
really, and as a fan of British television as well, you know, I did actually get to see other pieces of his work and stuff, so I mean, it was really kind of cool. But at any rate, you know, so moving along, though, that was the mention that all those mentions came from BBC, so thank you to BBC. According to Vulture, however, moving forward, Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo will reprise their roles for the Vacation reboot. So what they've done is is instead of doing it where it's Clark Griswold, okay, and they're rebooting it in that aspect, what they're actually doing is they're just passing the torch, okay?
To Rusty, right?
Yes. So now Rusty is going to be taking his family on the crazy kooky road trip, and much as Clark stopped by to go see, you know, his crazy kooky cousin Ed, now Rusty is going to be stopping by his crazy kooky parents' house. So that's how they're fitting them in.
And who plays Rusty and
Ed Helms?
It's Ed Helms and Christina Applegate.
Ed Helms. Right. Oh yeah, and yes, and Christina Applegate, right. Some people are kind of on the fence about Ed Helms. I don't know. I think it's a just fine call. I'd be hard pressed. I think, honestly, I think an inspired call would be Johnny Galecki, because not only would I think it'd be absolutely funny to watch him to watch him perpetuate the Vacation franchise, but it would be cool because he actually played Rusty in Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, and also I think it kind of just depends on who the director is also. Because you can have, like, you know, because a director can ruin a movie. They can ruin a franchise. To where if you get the guy who did, you know, the Hangover movies, you know, might not be a good call to do that unless you get, like you know, if, like, Harold Ramis directed it, for example. So hopefully they find a good person to helm the movie, producer-wise as well as director-wise.
Right, and also according to Vulture, no word yet on whether Randy Quaid or any of the girls who played Audrey Griswold would be returning. Also, there's no word yet on the status of Wally World's renovations.
Well, Randy Quaid got arrested, didn't he? A couple years
ago. Yeah, he's had like kind of a weird run. I don't know how much of it is really directly his fault, but apparently his wife is both batshit crazy and bad with money. And there's been a lot of fraud allegations going on in their direction.
I remember, like, they stayed at a hotel and they left without paying.
Yeah, that kind of stuff, and yeah. Bad checks, and yeah. So I'm not really sure how that all ended up working out. But
now, if he's actually living in a trailer now, that might be kind of funny, and a little ironic. In a way.
Life imitates art. Imitating life. So my last bit of news is, according to GeekZenith.com, Avengers 2 to start shooting in early 2014, with the location being the UK. So that's right, ladies and gentlemen, Avengers sequel gets its shooting schedule. And basically this is Marvel Movie Universe Phase 2. So it's going to begin with Iron Man 3 and then conclude with Avengers 2. And according to GeekZenith.com, it promises to be even more explosive than Phase 1. So it's going to be kind of cool because we get Iron Man 3, and then Avengers 2 is also going to follow on the Captain America sequel and Thor: The Dark World. Both of those movies, interestingly, were both shot in the UK. And apparently this just continues the preference that Marvel seems to be showing with Britain. And I'm just really super excited, which means, you know, in about a year and a half, we could see, though more than likely it'll be summer 2015, but you never know, could be a badass holiday movie. We could see Avengers 2, I hope sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And that is the news. The news, the news. So, moving on to 3 Squared. Three Squared, again for this week. Movies.
This is a bizarre one.
I really thought this was an inspired choice, though. Movies that do not exist in your eyes. Okay? So it doesn't matter that they made them. It doesn't matter that people liked them. That maybe they did well. Maybe they were blockbusters. Maybe they were bombs. It doesn't matter. If it were up to you, these movies would not exist in the universe today. Tim, go.
All right. Well, I have a lot for these. I mean, there are many choices because there are so many movies that even big blockbusters that so many people liked, but yet I did not because I was so angered by them. And there are mainly, I think there are about 4 or 5 movies that I actually wanted to leave the movie theater because I hated it so much. And I'm only going to mention 2 of the 20 or the 5 or however many is that.
Out of curiosity,
Alice in Wonderland by Tim Burton. It is not really a remake of the classic Disney movie based off the novel or based off the children's book. It's more so like the sequel, I guess, where Alice is older and she's about to get married and she ends up getting lost in brush and goes down the rabbit hole before she says I do at the marriage or some bullshit like that. The movie is basically overwrought with I saw it in 3D, with crappy 3D of special effects that look 2D even with the 3D. The movie is very dark and very sinister. There's a lot of death. The Mad Hatter, who we all remember being really goofy and a lot of fun and happy and singing and being a dork and being a jerk, is more of a really creepy guy. Like Edward Scissorhands' depressing uncle or something like that. It just made me sad seeing the final product of this movie. I'm just glad that these were the same producers that made Oz the Great and Powerful, that there was another better creative team behind Oz the Great and Powerful, and the producers helped make a better movie. Now my second movie is another sequel, I guess. It's Men in Black 2. And I don't know about you, Matt, but I was super duper annoyed with this movie, especially since it's between 2 really good movies. The first one is a classic, and the third one, which came out last year, was actually really good. Do you have any
will towards it? Men in Black was clever. I thought the ending was touching. And then Men in Black 2 just kind of seemed to be an excuse to make some money. But and consequently, I could take or leave it. I don't really care one way or the other, because the Men in Black franchise has never done that much for me.
Yeah.
But I will say this, that without the redheaded stepchild that is Men in Black 2, you would not have had any way to make Men in Black 3.
True. Which is why Men in Black 2 pisses me off. More so now. Because you want to show people Men in Black 1 and Men in Black 3, but you gotta at least show them somewhat some bits and pieces of Men in Black 2. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are a couple good parts of Men in Black 2. There are some laughs, but it's mainly slapstick stupidity throughout, mainly by the special effects and the aliens, which pretty much just ruin the movie. Especially Will Smith tries way too hard. Really the only funny person is Tommy Lee Jones, just because he's, you know, just deadpan as Agent... He's Agent K, right? Yeah, he's Agent K. Yeah, just the deadpan Agent K. Now, my third movie is actually 2 movies, a part of same franchise, I guess. First one is Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3. And the second one is The Amazing Spider-Man, Mark Webb's The Amazing Spider-Man, that came out this past year, which was the reboot of the Spider-Man franchise.
Boo to your choice, sir. Spider-Man 3,
I will say this, had way too many effing villains. I mean, you had Venom, you had Green Goblin, or Hobgoblin, whatever the hell that goblin is, and then you had the other bad Spider-Man.
Sandman,
that's what I meant, Sandman. And you had Sandman. Three villains, didn't really have enough time to develop any of their characters, other than the Hobgoblin, Green Goblin guy, James Franco, because he's been in every single, you know, of the movies. Venom just kind of happens in the last 25 minutes of the movie, which is kind of sucks, since, you know, that's kind of a fun villain to watch throughout the comic and throughout the cartoon especially. And emo Spider-Man. I mean, we don't need an emo, not emo Spider-Man, but emo Peter Parker just completely ruins the movie whenever you have the camera on the ground looking up and he's doing like the Saturday Night Fever kind of walk with his hair all in his face, his black hair all in his face. It was just ridiculous. And, just Spider-Man 3 was so much of a letdown. That was one of the first movies I've ever wanted to walk out with in the history of my movie going. And that says a lot, because I've seen some really crappy movies, and I really wanted to leave that one. Now, with saying that, The Amazing Spider-Man I could actually sit through, but by the end of it, I was so glad the movie was over so I could leave, because I was kind of checked out during most of the movie. I think I had something really good to, you know, in my mind to think about during the last 45 minutes of the movie, because to me, the movie just drags on. I think also a part of it is that I've seen Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. I've seen Spider-Man 2. I love the look of them. I think those movies had a better comic book aspect to them, which to me made it more appealing to watch visually, as well as the humor. I enjoyed the humor, the characterizations of the villains as well as the heroes, and basically the whole city that the movie takes place in, the atmosphere of New York, and how the movie was shot and how the movie was the first two Spider-Man movies were executed. But with The Amazing Spider-Man, you have a drama, more so. Very little action. A lot of teen romance. The movie teeters on being a indie movie, an action movie, a love story, a indie comedy. And there's just, like, the tone was to me, it was different throughout. However, it went on to make millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, and it was adored and loved by many people, including, I know Matt really enjoyed it. But to me, it did absolutely nothing. In fact, I was saddened a little bit by the end of it, unfortunately. So, again, three movies, or my four movies, Spider-Man 3, The Amazing Spider-Man, Men in Black 2, and Alice in Wonderland.
Well, I gotta say, I somewhat agree with you on Spider-Man 3. And I might have put that on my list if you hadn't put it on your list. However, The Amazing Spider-Man, completely disagree. I think it was a good movie, as you just mentioned. I guess I was the only person in the universe who never actually got around to seeing Alice in Wonderland, Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland. I watched the first 15 minutes of it, but I got sidetracked with something and I had to pause it, and then I ended up like leaving, and that was like 2 years ago. So apparently I'm not missing much. But my choices for movies that would not exist or do not exist. The movie that made me hate M. Night Shyamalan, The Last Airbender. Fuck this movie. I'm sorry. And he claimed to be a fan. He claimed to get the idea to put this in development by watching the series and then with his kids. And I'm like, well, clearly he wasn't paying attention to what he was watching, because this movie is just shit. It is hands down the worst 3D I have ever seen. And I'm talking about when they used to do the red and blue 3D in the 50s. This is the worst 3D I have ever seen. People were literally booing at the end of this movie, and I think that everybody really? Probably wow. would have gotten out, gotten left en masse. But I think it was literally like when you can't take your eyes away from a train wreck. okay? You know, you just kind of like, you want to look away, but you can't. I mean, people literally, it was awesome. I went to a midnight showing, and people were dressed. There was this really cool cosplay going on, and someone had got Aang down to a T and was able to do like backflips and shit in the front. So we got treated to a pretty kick-ass show. That, I guess, was worth the price of admission. but the movie was just so bad. Piss poor acting. Special effects were okay. They probably would have been pretty good had it not been for just the worst 3D. Such shoddy 3D. Like, you could take the glasses off and it was less blurry. That's how bad the 3D was. It was one of the worst post-production jobs I'd ever seen in my life. And it's that's why I am so hard. That's why I'm so down. It's because of this movie that I'm so down on 3D. Because it taught me what to look for when something's filmed in 3D versus when it's a post-production process. With the exception of animation like Pixar, because clearly you can do it all with computers and it's better that way. So yeah, Last Airbender does not exist.
Yikes. Luckily, I did not see that movie.
Yes, luckily. If you're ever interested, I highly recommend the anime series. Please watch that to your heart's content. It's amazing. Legend of Korra, not as good, but still really good. For those who listen, who watch the new series. As far as I'm concerned, there's never been a sequel to Cars. I'm still waiting for it. Now, I know that we actually did review this movie, so I guess now one of our episodes doesn't exist either. by default. I know you liked the movie.
I did, yeah.
This is, I guess, our equivalent, or my equivalent to your Amazing Spider-Man. This was just... everything you know and love about the Cars universe is completely destroyed, and also this is a lesson that everybody should learn as to why the second banana is the second banana, because they're not enough to carry the movie. That's all I have to say about it. We've hashed this out for 30-40 minutes once before. Last movie that doesn't exist for me, Rocky V. This was a movie that was so bad, Stallone admitted that he, quote, neglected it. Okay, and came back and did Rocky VI to actually close it off properly when he did Rocky Balboa, which was widely received, which was critically acclaimed and did amazingly well in the theaters. So, yeah, this movie is just like, good Lord, a street fight at the end in front of your kid? Come on. Against a guy named Tommy Gunn?
And seriously? I didn't see that one either.
Oh, you're so lucky. You really are lucky. Yeah. So, at any rate, yeah, just look at it as Rocky. And the nice thing was is because he bookended it, okay? He was really smart to bookend this movie, all right? Because you have Rocky, and then Rocky 2, Rocky 3, Rocky 4, the movie that doesn't exist, which we can pull out now, and then you can just bookend it with Rocky Balboa. So people in the future can actually, like, go about their life never even knowing that this particular movie exists.
You kind of wonder if with a series of movies like that, if they will start phasing out the crummier movie, you know?
You know,
like, there's a better other sequel that comes after the crummier one. We're just going to get rid of the crummy one and move this other one over, so like whenever you see the box sets released or the re-release of movies, they just won't release that one movie. I like to see that happen.
And it's interesting. Actually, I think I'm going to... I am introducing my children, specifically my oldest daughter, to the Star Wars movies. Mm-hmm. And we started the other day on... we started on Sunday with Episode 4. A New Hope, which is, you know, as you should, you should start there. And my cousin sent me an article, and he's like, oh, you got to read this article, and I highly recommend doing this method. It's called the machete viewing. And I think I am going to go ahead and do an essay on this. It probably won't be next week or whatever, because, you know, I'm gone. But I think in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to do an essay on this. Essentially, the viewing order for the Machete viewing is episode 4, episode 5, episode 2, episode 3, and episode 6. You watch them in that order, and notice there's only 5 movies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're gonna. That's how we're gonna watch it. After I read this article, I decided that is how I'm gonna do this for my daughter, and we're gonna see how it works out. Because she, I mean, as soon as we finished 4, she was like, well, "Can we watch the next one?" I was like, "Hell yeah!" So we started watching it, but it got too late and everything. So we haven't been able, because of school and everything, haven't been able to pick it back up. So, but yeah, so look forward to that.
We should have her do a segment on the show about what she thought of Star Wars. I think that'd be kind of funny.
I'll see what I can do. I'll see if I can try and do a little interview with her. But it is interesting because people are already starting to do that. And I mean, clearly Star Wars is an easy example, but I think it's funny because there are now specific viewing orders, people who actually submit ways to view these movies and stuff. And so I read up on this Machete viewing and yeah. So now that, and there is a classic example. They're now omitting episode 1.
Cool. I'll keep that in mind.
All right, well then, that concludes the three squared. I guess let's do the movies.
Yes.
Movies.
What do you want to start with?
I don't care. Whichever one.
How about Basic? I really want to know what you think about Basic.
Okay, so Basic, I actually saw when it came out.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't realize it when you put it in there. For some reason, it didn't click. So I started watching. I was like, oh yeah, I've seen this before. I like Tim Daly or Daly or whatever. I kind of, you know, I don't know. I was a big fan of Wings or whatever. And so it was really cool for me to see him in this movie. This is... When it came out, I liked it. I mean, I didn't think it was, like, the best movie in the world. I certainly didn't think it was as bad as the critics found it, nor as bad as it did in the box office. It didn't even make its budget back. But I thought it was a pretty good movie. I didn't... Perhaps maybe because I wasn't... looking at it as a thriller as much as I was, or a mystery thriller as much as I was just kind of enjoying, you know, John Travolta and just kind of seeing the acting and the characters kind of play out.
Yeah, and that's one of those movies where it's a good movie if you just sit back and just watch it.
Yeah, if you're not trying to if you're not trying to figure it out, or you're not trying to understand every little thing, because I got to try and work this out. And yeah, I can see how that happens, because if you try and do that, you can't ever catch up. But I mean, if you just kind of sit down and let the movie happen, again, it's not the best movie in the world. I think it's 3 stars out of 5 for me on Netflix. If you sit back and let the movie, I thought the one thing I didn't like was the ending. I thought the ending was just not only was it convoluted and contrived, I know I use that word a lot, but I mean, this one really kind of was. It almost seems like it was a reshoot. They whatever they initially had planned just totally didn't work out. So like, hey, let's make it this special ending that we have. I don't want to spoil it for you because it is kind of a complete twist ending. But basically...
Where it'll ruin the entire movie.
And it will completely ruin the entire movie. Yeah. Essentially, Army Ranger trainees go out on a training mission. Shit goes down. People end up dead. And a woman has to come in to investigate. However, the captain who comes in to investigate gets... basically... gets a friend from the DEA, an ex-ranger, okay? Whose name is Tom Hardy. That's kind of cool. I didn't put that together till just now. And who's an ex-Ranger, now DEA agent. And basically, this guy is kind of under investigation for secondary shady activities, and brings him in and tries to figure out what happened and put it all together. And drugs are involved, and, you know, all sorts of conspiracy stuff is happening. And so that's kind of, so that's basically the idea behind the movie. And I think that's what I think, given when it was released, the amount of star power it had, John McTiernan was directing. Interestingly, this is his last movie that he directed before he got into a whole bunch of trouble.
And for those who don't know, he did Die Hard.
Yes. He actually, his back-to-back, he was like the three-peat champion, because he did Predator, Die Hard, and Hunt for Red October in a row. So that's kind of where, you know, he made his name. And he also did the remake of The Thomas Crown Affair, which I personally enjoyed. I liked the original. I liked the remake. Most people who liked the original did not like the remake. Neither here nor there. But I think people were expecting a lot more from this movie. And I think it also helps that, you know, this is 10 years ago. So my frame of mind as a 25-year-old dude was kind of like, cool, army movie. So, again, not a big fan of the ending. Really, I felt like it was thrown together. Can't explain why, because it's a twist ending and I don't want to spoil it for you. But all in all, sit back and enjoy the show. 3 stars. What about you, sir?
I just like the plot of the movie and the mystery of the movie and how it was going back and forth, you know, showing what happened as the story was being told and as they are learning bits and pieces of what really happened. They show you a little bit more of what happened in the flashback, you know, that you just saw not too long beforehand. I also love the look of the movie. It's takes place at night. It's raining, I think, during all of the movie. So it, you know, it just creates a cool mood to the movie. It's one of those mood movies where, you know, you hear thunder while people are talking. You know, whenever it's like very ominous, you have an ominous character, a very mysterious character, more thunder in the background and all that stuff. And also, Giovanni Ribisi plays a super weird character in this movie. He just has that he has like a really creepy voice. And, you know, this goes to show how great of a character actor this guy is. So that alone to me is worth seeing the movie. Then again, this movie basic also has a contrived romance in it between John Travolta and the lady officer, I guess, which is kind of annoying, where you have to throw in a romance while they're trying to solve a case, I guess. And every once in a while, they overuse the same flashbacks as they did with the previous flashbacks. So instead of like showing you a different angle or a different aspect of a flashback, they just show you the same thing. And that just kind of annoys me with some movies. Like, I just saw a documentary where, with a lot of documentaries, it was a Sound City, David Grohl's documentary about the Sound City Studios. With a lot of documentaries, you know, you use a lot of stock footage and a lot of B-roll while people are talking, so you have something prettier to look at than the actual person being interviewed talking to the audience, I guess. However, they use so much of the same B-roll and the same stock footage and the same footage that they shot back in the 70s and 80s and early 90s that, you know, just got really repetitive and a little bit annoying being able to spot that and remember exactly when you saw that same footage 4 times before, you know, during the movie. So, you know, I guess if that's the only negative part I have of the movie, it's, you know, it's got to be a pretty good movie. So I thoroughly enjoyed it, especially for the experience of trying to figure out the mystery and enjoying the storyline, because it's, you know, you have a really good director and then you also have a really good ensemble cast, especially with Sam Jackson in it. Sam Jackson's always entertaining to watch, especially when he's cussing, you know.
indeed.
It's not a Sam Jackson movie if he doesn't throw out the mother effer 5 times, 5, 10 times.
Absolutely. So, all right, well then, let's move along. How about The Vanishing then? which was kind of in the same vein as what did we watch? Breakdown.
Roadblock?
Yeah. So, this was my recommendation to you. What did you think?
Okay, so The Vanishing is a 1993 thriller directed by George... it's a French last name, so I'm probably going to screw it up. Sluzier, S-L-U-I-Z-E-R. Sluzier, Sluzier, Sluzier.
I don't
something
know.
Something like that. Well, he also... It's actually a remake of 1988 French film called The Vanishing, directed by...
Him.
The same guy, yeah. And so this... version is the Hollywood Americanized version with a happy ending, whereas the original version did not have a happy ending. It was more, I guess, realistic, one would say. It's more of a more dark and a brooding piece, a brooding character piece, whereas it pissed off a lot of critics who saw this new version because they were expecting the French movie, but you know, without subtitles and in English and taking place in, you know, Washington or wherever the hell they had it based in. And it wasn't that at all. It was Americanized. It was Hollywoodified. It was dumbed down so much that it really pissed off a lot of the critics. Now, with saying that, the movie stars Jeff Bridges, Kiefer Sutherland, and Sandra Bullock. It's about a couple. Kiefer Sutherland and Sandra Bullock go on a road trip. They see Mount St. Helen, and they go, you know, I guess they're heading through Washington, the state of Washington, till their car, you know, I guess they have to go get gas or something. While they're in the parking lot getting gas, she, Sandra Bullock, the wife, goes into the gas station to go get some cold beverages. However, she doesn't come back. So then Kiefer Sutherland has a three-year-long excursion, or, you know, takes 3 years for him to, trying to find his wife. However, by the end of 3 years, he ends up meeting another woman, played by Nancy Travis, and they develop a relationship, and, you know, that's a good idea of what the story is. Now, before I get into the, you know, the technicalities of it, I will say that once the corniness of the movie, once I got over Jeff Bridges' Native American chief voice that he has, because he has a very... He's the villain, he's the bad guy, but he has this really weird voice and a really weird haircut as well. Once I got over that, once I got over the really unbelievable corny dialogue that Kiefer Sutherland has and Nancy Travis has, even Sandra Bullock has, and, I enjoyed the look of the movie, the pacing of the movie, the scenes especially. I mean, this could very well go into the category of, I thought the movie was so bad that it was entertaining to watch. I mean, again, it was one of those movies that's an hour and 50 minutes long. If I hated the movie would have trudged on forever. However, it went by pretty quick. That means I paid attention to it, I enjoyed it, and I got something out of it. Maybe nothing really cinematically inquisitive, but something it was indeed. Now, other than Jeff Bridges' interesting hair and interesting dialogue, I just what really got me about the movie was the setups that kind of happened to establish the characters. Like, you have Kiefer Sutherland and Sandra Bullock. They try to set up, when you first meet them, they're on a road trip, that there's some kind of tension between them. However, the car runs out of gas. For some reason, people that drive Jeeps don't know how to, you know, take care of their cars, as we all
know. Well, yeah, I mean, because this is what happens in Breakdown, you know, so.
Yeah. And so they're basically in a tunnel, in this rock tunnel, to where Sandra Bullock is freaking out, her character's freaking out, because no cars can see them whenever they're coming through the tunnel. So she's like, okay, well, I will leave. You know, he's like, well, we need to go to a gas station, get some more gas or whatever. And she's like, wait, don't go yet. Let me find a flashlight. He's like, no. If you're going to take my time out to, you know, go through all that mess, which it's not a mess. I mean, there's like 5, 4, 3, 2, however many, you know, suitcases in the back. Then I'm just leaving. So while she's trying to find a flashlight, which is a very logical thing to do when you're walking through a dark tunnel trying to reach the other side, so nobody doesn't hit you, you know, driving past you, he just leaves her there. Completely leaves her there. And it just cuts to him walking back from the gas station with a can of gas. She's not there, so he gets in her car and drives off, and he finds her, picks her up, and they, you know, I guess they find a way to bond. That just annoys me, because why the hell did you just leave her there? I mean, it makes complete sense to pick up a flashlight, to grab a flashlight. Yet, Kiefer Sutherland's character is a big doofus, I thought. With that, everything happens that happens in the movie happens perfectly in a forced order, like dialogue is forced, and it's just so clean. I mean, everything is just clean and so fictionalized in this movie. For example, Nancy Travis's character, whenever he first meets her in the diner, and she's wearing these earrings that have forks on them, and just how the dialogue between her boss and with him is just, again, just very forced and very clean. I mean, just that stuff, people don't talk like that in real life. I mean, there are people say ums. I mean, just listen to this show and listen to how horrible I am at speaking at times, where I say a lot of ums. There needs to be some ums within this movie, and people don't blink at all. I don't know what the hell is wrong with these folks not blinking. I guess they don't like to show off their eyelids in some way. And an example that I have with how over-polished this movie is close to the end of the movie, and this is a spoiler alert, so warning. Nancy Travis finds out what is going on, because at the time, Kiefer Sutherland gets, I guess, kidnapped, or pretty much forces himself to get kidnapped, because for some dumb reason he decides to get in the car with the kidnapper, and he decides to drink out of a mug to put him to sleep so, you know, he can be taken advantage of by the kidnapper, which that's a whole other part of the movie that just is ridiculous. So on her way to go figure out where this guy is, she goes to his house where his daughter's coming out, and she basically gets the daughter to come in the car so they can have a little dialogue. And she basically says, well, where's this guy? Where's your father? Oh, he's probably at the cabin. Oh, I think I will go to the cabin. However, I don't remember how to get there. Well, she's like, don't worry, I'll show you the way. But you can take me by this guy's, or you can drop me off at this boy's house because it's on the way. And, sorry. Yeah, she basically says that, you know, why don't you drop me off at this boy's house, or at this house, because it's along the way, because I'm meeting a boy. My parents don't know about this boy. And it's just how they say it. I mean, I'm doing it no justice of how ridiculous, you know, this scene is. But it's just way too polished and very robotronic for its own good. You don't really understand the killer's motive, why he does this. I mean, basically, Jeff Bridges, his character, just says that he has to prove that he's capable of pure evil, as well as proving that he is capable of being good. So, as well as being a good father, his idea of proving to himself that he's a good father, as well as being a good human being, he has to prove that he can also be an evil human being by kidnapping somebody, by killing something, by, you know, just, like I said, being pure evil. That was very, very weird, I guess. I guess it's very French, in a way. And then there's this other scene, which this is pretty much going to be, you know, for the next minute. It's me going through scenes, which to me are just so ridiculous, where Nancy Travis goes through Kiefer Sutherland's, his character's, belongings to find out that with 3 years after his wife's disappearance, he's still obsessed with finding her. He's still obsessing over her. So she doesn't know what to do because she wants him all to herself. She doesn't want him worrying about his wife or this or that. So she randomly shows up, and by the, you know, the character is close up on the door, and when he opens the door, Nancy Travis is standing there in front of him wearing a black wig, trying to look like his wife, his missing wife. And it is just ridiculous. And of course, with me saying it doesn't sound ridiculous, but it really is. Then you have instances where, you know, Nancy Travis is trying to figure out what's going on, so she goes to the bizarre neighbor, and this bizarre neighbor is awkwardly singing the Lucky Charm song, and when she comes in, she tells her to be quiet or she'll wake Elvis. Again, on paper, it might look okay, but when it's actually played out, it's pretty ridiculous. And then you have a briefcase where Kiefer Sutherland kept a little six-shooter gun in this briefcase. Well, instead of Nancy Travis at the end of the movie taking the gun out of the briefcase or making sure the gun is inside the briefcase to take it to, I guess, to shoot the killer at the end of the movie, she decides to carry the entire briefcase with her. So whenever came the time for her to actually open up the briefcase to shoot Jeff Bridges, she finds out that there is no gun within the briefcase, which she could have found that out before she left to go fight him or to you know, come in contact with him. So that there's really no point of me going on from there, to be honest.
I was gonna say, I mean, man, geez, you are just like
gas by then was $1.27. That was crazy. Because you see this gas station throughout the movie. $1.27. It took them $15 to fill up their Jeep. What the hell is going on? 1993 was such a good year when it came to gas.
Apparently.
Yeah. But with saying all that, I mean, I give the movie 2.5 out of 5 stars. Because, again, when you can look over this ridiculousness and you can find a way to pinpoint good acting... Because, you know, there is good acting within these ridiculous characters and this ridiculous storyline and these ridiculous motives. I mean, you have Kiefer Sutherland, and Nancy Travis is a fine actress, and then you have Jeff Bridges attempting to play a iconic villain, which in some weird way he does accomplish, because I will never forget that role. Whether it be bad or good, Jeff Bridges does a really good job in this movie. So... yeah, that's what I've got to say about it.
Sweet.
As scattered.
I liked it. I liked it. I have to say I would give it 3 stars out of 5. Only based on nostalgia, because it did not age. It has not aged well. And did you see the original?
No, I did not.
Okay, neither did I. So I had no point of reference when I watched this movie back in the day. 20 years ago, and I liked it then, and then now I watch it, and my thinking now is that basically, what the fuck does a 16-year-old, a 15-year-old, whatever, know about movies, right? Okay, so, because that's how old I was when I watched it. But I will say that I did like it then, and it's an okay movie now, but it just hasn't aged well, and you can completely see through it. So I can see why the critics didn't like it versus the remake. I'm not going to watch versus the original, and I'm not going to take the time to watch the original since it's the same movie. So I guess let's move on to G.I. Joe. Not as shitty as the first one. No, that's not what it's called. It's called G.I. Joe Retaliation. It's called G.I. Joe. Yes, I'm sorry. I think they should have named it G.I. Joe Not Quite As Shitty As The First One. So.
Well, then they couldn't have showed it in China. Then.
Why?
Because language.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. All right, so I... watched the first one. In order to watch this movie, I watched the first one, and I really didn't want to watch this movie at all because I had heard nothing but good things. I'm sorry, nothing but bad things about the first one, so I never watched the first one. However, I was able to get a friend of mine to lend it to me so I could watch it for free, so I didn't have to pay for it, so I guess that's a good thing. And now I finally understand why that... everybody said, oh, the movie's bad, but Joseph Gordon-Levitt is really good. It's not because Joseph Gordon-Levitt was really good. It's just as compared to the pile of shit that was the rest of fucking G.I. Joe, The Rise of the Cobra, he looked like an Oscar fucking winning actor, okay? He just was the best actor there. That movie was just complete shit. However, it was literally like watching the cartoon when you were a kid, just made as a live action. So I was laughing my ass off most of this movie.
And so it got me up to speed, and so now I go and I threw away $10. Thank God I didn't pay for 3D. I was so happy because I was worried with getting off of work and trying to make it home and everything that I might get stuck paying for a 3D version of this, or even worse, an IMAX 3D. So thankfully I only had to pay $10 for this. Retaliation picks up, I don't know how long, but we can assume a year or less has passed from the first movie to the second movie, where they bring only two characters back from the first movie, Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes. And spoiler alert, Channing Tatum comes back briefly. And by briefly, motherfucker dies like 5.5 minutes into this shit. Alright, so... but they go ahead and introduce some new characters. Roadblock, played by Dwayne Johnson. You might know him as The Rock. Flint and Lady J. You also get introduced to Jinx, who is actually the cousin of Storm Shadow. But she's with the Joes. And... oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I guess there was a fourth returning. Jonathan Pryce was returning. And technically, Arnold Vosloo came back. But, sorry, I'm not buying. Because you only see a computer-generated version of his face, like, twice.
Yeah, I was about to say. Yeah, it's just for very short
period. Yeah, so I'm going to say it's technically he's there. But, yeah, technically. But, no, I'm not. Yeah, so... his likeness makes a comeback. So I'm not counting him as a fifth person. And essentially, they... So basically, the, you know, Cobras got themselves installed where they need to be and then basically wiped the Joes out and framed the Joes for a crime that they didn't commit. Much like the A-Team, I guess. So anyway... and then, of course, the Joes have to come back and fight, and then they go back and get the original G.I. Joe, a general who's played by Bruce Willis. And you can definitely see he was thrown in at the last minute going, man, he might actually save this movie. People might come and watch it if he's in it. So he was definitely a last-minute addition. This movie technically... is better. It is. There is better special effects. The pacing is better. For whatever it's worth, the acting is better. Probably due to the fact that virtually nobody from the original movie is in this movie. And the story is actually better. However, once again, this is just a continuation of the cartoon. This is just a continuation of the cartoon where they've just done it as live action. So again, I'm just laughing at the stupid retardedness of this thing, but I'm enjoying it because at this point, it is truly ridiculous. And I like, okay, so there's this one part. They introduce Blind Master, okay? They introduce Blind Master, played by RZA, who honestly deserves the Razzie Award for the worst actor ever, okay? He is trying to talk about how, you know, Snake Eyes and Jinx have to go after Storm Shadow and, you know, to salvage Storm Shadow and blah, 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 and redeem him for the murder that, whatever. And it is so bad. I mean, it's meant to be, like, completely serious and everything, and it's, like, filled with passion and dedication for their art as martial artists or whatever, for their, you know, Wu-Tang Clan or whatever the fuck. And I'm laughing my ass off. People were looking at me in the theater. I'm not going to lie. There was probably about 20 people in the theater, and people were looking at me because I was laughing, and I think they were taking... Eventually, the dude right behind me started laughing too because he talks like 4 different times in the movie, and he just does the same damn thing, and I think people finally figured out what I was laughing at because they stopped looking at me by the 4th time that he talks. And it's like, okay, it's not like... All right, so... You know, we have to bring Storm Shadow back to our clan to basically answer for the crime of killing our master. No, no, it's not like that. It's not, you know, it's really important that we bring him back alive to answer for his crimes. No, 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 it's Snake Eyes and Jinx, the cousin of Storm Shadow. You must go and bring him back to us. This is a black dude, folks. Black dude. You must bring him back to us, to our clan,
yeah,
so that
bad.
He may be made to answer for his crime.
That's pretty much exactly how it sounds like, too.
You must use this special sword, Snake Eyes, but bring him back alive. I'm like, are you fucking... I'm. How do you not laugh at that? You know? So... And that's how he talks the whole time. And his name... Oh, yes, he's supposed to be Blind Master. You know, I don't know. Fucker needs to learn how to talk. So at any rate... The movie is better than the first one. However, I'm going to sum it up by leaving for those of you who might follow me on Twitter or, you know, pick us up on Facebook or whatever. Follow me on Facebook as a personal friend who listens to the show, because I know there's like one of you out there. This is what I posted. Just wrapped up G.I. Joe Retaliation, and it's better than the first. Kind of like bad fish is better than feces.
Less corn.
Yeah. You know. So, that's... So, yeah, I would say 2.5 stars on this one. 3 stars if you're just willing to do mindless... If you're just willing to mindlessly sit back and accept that this is essentially a live version of a cartoon. But, yeah. Two stars, actually, based on the merits of filmmaking.
Yeah, I mean, the movie, it's definitely funnier than the first one. And this one definitely has some witty moments. Thanks to the president. Jonathan Pryce, I think, probably takes home a number of the laughs, especially whenever he's, you know, they're in the war room and he's over there playing Angry Birds.
Yes, that was pretty good. That was pretty good.
And there are definitely exciting moments, especially that whole Snake Eyes and whatever her name is, the mountain scene, the 10 minute, which apparently was 10 minutes, and there was no talking, and I thought that was kind of cool. That was definitely the better of most of the action sequences in the entire movie.
Yeah, maybe they shouldn't have made that every fucking trailer ever for the movie, and I probably would have enjoyed that more.
Yeah, I know, exactly. That's, yeah, no, I agree with you there. However, what I will say is that the movie had a problem with jumbling plots and characters together and having characters thrown in there. It's like Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis is only in the movie for maybe about 15 minutes, I think. And yet he is the one person that you see the entire body of on the poster of the movie. Yet you really don't need him in the movie. I mean, seriously, he is thrown in there. And he doesn't really say much. He is not really, other than being the Joe character, and with some minor script changes, his character would have been left out, and that's what's annoying. And another scene in particular that had that didn't sit too well with me is when they're overseas, they're in whatever desert when all this mayhem happens, and Tatum Channing dies. 3 of the Joes get left out there to fend for themselves. So in order to get back to America, they have to board a plane or get on a boat or, you know, some way of travel to get over there. Excuse me, to get back over here. They can't just teleport or anything like that. So it shows them going up and they see a airport and they're looking through the binoculars and, you know, they're a few miles away and I guess they're like, well, I think we just found our ticket out of here. We found our ticket home. And suddenly, before you know it, they are in Washington. Somehow they hijacked a plane or they snuck onto a plane, which you never see, and suddenly they are in Washington and they know everything that is going on. That's another thing, is like they're not getting schematics from anybody, like they're not getting a breakdown of what the president's doing or what what their scenario is. They're just kind of going out on a limb and doing research on like news and watching news and not really knowing what the hell's going on. However, they are referencing what the broader aspect of the evil villain's plan is.
Well, yeah, but the again, reason
they,
why they
how do they know about it though? I mean,
the reason well that's just it though. That's just it, though. The reason why they know that is because when they get into the abandoned gym rec center or whatever the hell it was, they were able to use the 20-year-old computer equipment and build, like, the latest, greatest computers and then hack into the networks. You see? You know, did you notice that she looks down, Lady J looks down and sees the old circuit boards and, like, the 20-year-old CRT monitor? And then, like, okay, I'm gonna build the computer network with the leftover stuff. And then she's using, like, Logitech keyboards and a fucking flat panel LCD, you know, and shit like that when she's actually doing that stuff.
That's how.
It was the magic. That whole magic, just how they got, you know, somehow were able to get on a plane from Afghanistan or Pakistan or wherever the hell they were back to, you know, the States.
Yeah, and for me, that shit is what ruined, what could have completely ruined the movie for me. I mean, the movie has a lot of fun to it, and you can tell that some of the characters are having a good time, but you have these, the ending of the movie pisses me off, because again, you only see Bruce Willis for maybe 1 minute throughout the ending of the movie. He doesn't need to be there. The last 10 minutes of the movie is just kind of thrown together, and it wraps up super quick, and you know, with that in the characters and all of a sudden they know everything and all of a sudden they're here and this is what's going on. I mean, you don't even know what the time frame of all this shit is, because suddenly, you know, Snake Eyes is in Asia.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. I mean, I don't think they really had a timeline. However, I was reminded of something probably during that scene of the movie that I don't remember watching, because they did reshoots for the movie, and I'm still not sure what reshoots they did, probably an action scene or something like that, but my god, I would love to see, I wouldn't pay for it, maybe renting the Redbox movie or something, I would love to see the movie before there were reshoots added onto it, just to see how it was like, if it was less exciting or better, maybe. Could have been better. Also, I will note that I did see it in 3D. And what I will say about the 3D is that the 3D is not the best 3D. However, if you're able to spend just a few more bucks on it, it is what I like to call the gimmicky 3D. Whereas, you know, you have the red-blue 3D of the 40s and the 50s and even the 60s and 70s and 80s. Where this... the screen basically pops out, other than giving the film depth, which, like Avatar and Hugo, there was depth into the screen. Like, it looked like you can walk into the screen and you would be in this world. Well, with G.I. Joe, you can see, like, the table popping out at you. You can see a gun being pointed at you and just stuff like that, which, to me, I think added to... maybe made the movie a little bit more fun than how maybe it actually is, in a way. So, just to throw that out there to those of you who can afford it, it might be worth seeing in 3D on a big screen, if you do plan to see it at the movie theater. And that's all I got.
Okay, well, good enough then. So I guess that brings us to a close. Again, there are no, quote, movies to watch for us, because, you know, Tim and Andy are going to do a great job of discussing all these films that you should have watched last year. No Three Squared for next week either. And because, again, of the in-depth discussion that's going to be going on. So I guess it's time for the spiel. All right, so the music you've been listening to, as always, has been brought to us by Cries of Solace. You can check them out at criesofsolace.com, MySpace, or Facebook.com, /Cries of Solace. And you can, you know... catch us too. You can send us an email to theslscast@twitter.com. You can catch us on Facebook as well, searching SLScast there. You can, you know, follow us on Twitter @theslscast, and you can go to our website, slscast.com, or you can just subscribe to us on iTunes. We look forward to talking to you again soon. I look forward to catching up with you guys in a couple of weeks. I'll be enjoying my time at Disney, and Yeah. That's it. Peace out, peoples.
Cheers.
Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, at the SLS Cast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.